But I'm serious, dude.
We need it.
We need lots of good artisan restaurants. We should propagate this.
Propagate?
Is it propagate?
Propagate?
Propagate.
No, there's an somewhere.
There's promulgate.
That's what I'm thinking of. Promulgate. Promote or make widely known. That's it. Propagate. Sound like an idiot.
I mean, propagate is a thing, and that's the same.
But I was merging those two.
Propagate means to breed specimens.
I wish I knew other languages. You know?
Same. Seriously.
I mean, I know why people fake speaking in tongues, you know?
They just want to feel special.
It's like they don't want to put the work in to like actually learn another language. And it's just like, I'm going to hit them with the jibber jabber slamma jamma, you know? It's like, bro, I feel you. I know where you're coming from. I want to go to foreign places and say real things. But what you're saying right now,
you can't order at a Mexican restaurant in tongues. It doesn't work.
It's like,
wait. You know what nobody argues when they're arguing for the spiritual gift of tongues?
What?
Nobody argues that it should be as prominent as it was in the apostolic era. Everybody's like, oh yeah, I know it exists, but it only exists in this one particular area. I'm like, but if we're going Acts here, man, they were converted, they spoke in tongues. Yeah, this is what happened.
They were in the public square.
Right? It's like, don't put that on me. Like, if you're going to argue for it, everybody at Mercy Hill, or at least half, should be.
Yeah, people ought to be interpreting.
Oh yeah, like mad. But it's like, wait, maybe it was a sign for the unbeliever so that they would repent and believe the gospel. And it probably wasn't used heavily inside the local church anyway.
You know what, because I believe they heard
in their own language.
They heard in their own language.
Of course they did.
So we would never know.
Right.
We would never know.
I've never thought about that.
Yeah, you wouldn't hear the dot. You wouldn't hear the...
You could be surprised. Mm-hmm. Right, like by like someone knowing English.
I've never thought about this before.
Like, whoa, I just surrounded by English speakers. I speak only French.
And I understand.
I just understood what happened.
Yeah. That's the only way you'd know.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you know catfish tastes like catfish?
I could eat some catfish, bro.
It doesn't take like ice cream.
I'm so hungry. Welcome to Progress of Grace, a podcast by Mercy Hill Church. My name is Lawson Harlow, and with me today I have Don Terrell, and yes, Blake McCullough is here. Woo! So, Don, what are we doing today?
So today, what are we doing today? Today, we will discuss the title of today's episode, which is Goshen and His Story.
Gershon?
Oh, it's Gershon. Oh, man. But Goshen is
the land,
a real biblical place, but... Unfortunately,
Goshen's where they hung out.
Not a person. It is.
The land of Goshen.
Yeah, yeah, the land of Goshen.
It's where Israel was, hanging out in Egypt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but Moses and Zipporah were not there
yet. No, not yet.
And they were coming from the wilderness.
Gershon.
So, today...
They were at the inn.
We're not going to discuss Goshen. We're going to discuss Gershon.
So have you ever, like, in my brain, you ever read something and in your brain there's a setting? You know, like, you're just reading. You're like, this is the setting. So fun fact, when I was reading Harry Potter for the first time, nobody judged me or write me a letter about reading Harry Potter.
I'm reading it right now.
Cool.
I read it on my way here.
You can literally send your letters and complaints to Blake.
People get mad when you say you read audiobooks.
It counts.
So I listened to it on the way here.
So
wait, hold on. Hold your spot, Lawson. But why?
What?
Just for your own personal enjoyment?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just, and when I ride in the car for like an hour and a half every day.
Yeah.
And so.
You got plenty of time.
I listen to the Bible.
Just redeem
no
the time.
One cuss me. I do listen to the Bible first in the morning. And
in
then,
your face.
And then I just listen to a book that I.
That you know, wanted to hear.
Right now it's the fifth Harry Potter.
So in my mind's eye, Dumbledore. Until like the third book, somebody's outside. Oh, hey, Drew, you scared me.
Drew Boo.
Until like the third.
Slam the door, man.
until
you get mad about it.
until like the third book, Dumbledore was a humanoid rhinoceros in my brain. I don't know why.
Huh.
Fourth grade.
It is weird because in my brain, where Moses and Zipporah and Gershom
are.
That's
what I was saying. Okay, yeah.
Where are they in for you?
Well, no, I want you to tell me.
It's just like a flat
in transit
desert.
They're, yeah, just they're in the wilderness of sin.
In the
but they're at an inn.
Yeah, well,
it says
at a
inn,
lodging place.
At a lodging place.
So I always missed that until
it doesn't
this
mean
week.
Anything. This man says, bro, it says in the inn. It doesn't mean anything.
These people were traveling along.
Like, it's not a
thing.
Holiday Inn.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. There's a pool.
No, it's not.
There's a pool.
Lawson.
There's a pool. And it's from the day.
Keep your Genesis 6
and it's from
to
the
yourself.
Days. And it's from the days
and
of Kimmins the Holiday
Wilson
Inn where they were
it.
Doing the build, where they were doing like the big cool
they just
areas.
Lodged someplace on the way.
Right, that's
I
yeah.
understand that, but I'm
like
saying.
Like they broke out the tents.
Those like, little woven blankets that we used to sit on in Sunday school, like yeah. that's what I envisioned. They're laying on that. There's a donkey chilling off to the side.
Okay, so there is a donkey in all of mine.
And
Zipporah
is like, where's that flint?
There's a camel.
All right, but this is the next fun question. Hold on.
Yo, you're hitting me.
So let's find out in the rest of this episode if. Hold on, I gotta find my idiom. Where is it?
So, in my view.
Wait. Wait. This is taking way too long. I lost the idiom.
Too busy looking for that restaurant name.
Oh, what was it? Oh, let's find out the rest of this episode if we go to pieces.
Oh, go to pieces.
Because there's so many. There pieces. Are a lot of opinions.
There are.
About this particular passage.
A bunch. And they're all opinions.
But we do have facts.
We do.
We'll deal with the facts today. Mm. If you're wondering why we're talking about this particular section of scripture on today's Products of Grace episode, is because Blake just preached through the passage on Gershom. I mean, what? Where is that in the Bible?
I know Exodus 4, 24 through 26.
Yeah. So, Lawson, back to what you were saying. You, Blake, you said they have those mats that you, this is your brain. This is what you're envisioning. And I think most people, when they're envisioning the scene, how are you envisioning the two sons? I think it's really common that people are placing, it's like, oh, they're playing, you know, they get the Tonka trucks out, mm-hmm. you know.
They're little.
Hey, we're pulling over at the rest area. We're going to sleep here for the night. Y'all play, don't run too far.
Yeah.
And I think the story takes a little bit of a, it gets, what do you want to say?
More graphic?
Maybe more real.
Yeah.
Because then all of a sudden you're like, Moses went out to the wilderness when he was 40. Mm-hmm. Stephen says this.
Mm-hmm.
He comes back when he's 80 mm-hmm. and he dies when he's 120.
Mm-hmm.
So when he originally goes into the wilderness in Genesis 3, when he meets,
Zipporah.
And I don't understand Jethro's name changing.
Yeah. Lots of what are you going to do when we get to that?
I don't know.
All right, cool.
You know, he's been out there 40 years, but originally in the text, here it is. It says in Genesis 2:21, and Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah, however you want to pronounce it. She gave birth immediately, dude. In the text, we don't know immediately in time, it says she
I assure you it was at least 9 months.
Huh? Okay.
At least 8.
Till
some folks don't make it all the way.
Okay, that's fair.
She gave birth to a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, I have been a sojourner in a foreign land.
Hmm.
I mean, he's in my mind. You can say like
he's 43.
He's 43. He's not 43, dude.
Gershom?
Gershom's
he's,
not 43.
He's got to be less than 40.
I'm talking about Moses.
When Gershom is born.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going with 43?
But at this moment.
Why not? Why can't he be 43?
Yeah, I do think he's got some years on him before because he's referencing,
you think
I have been a sojourner.
You think 43 is too old?
No, I mean, I'm not going to say that Gershom is, because Moses has been in the wilderness 40, I mean, excuse, yes, has been with Zipporah from moment he enters the wilderness to the moment he gets back to Egypt, per Stephen. He's been there 40 years. Yeah. He's an 80-year-old man on his journey back mm-hmm. with Zipporah and his two sons. Mm-hmm. He's 80. The question is, how old is Gershom and the other son? Mm-hmm. And I would contend that, I mean, I would say he's either 30 to 35.
Gotta be. I mean, you think about, like, that seems like the witness of the scriptures is that, I mean, and we don't get timelines, but it seems people get married very soon after they meet.
Yes.
Like, I was reading there's this morning.
There's no long betrothal period, I love that word.
Yeah, like Isaac and Rebecca, right? Yeah. Like, the servant's like, hey.
Welcome back from your journey, we're getting married.
Yeah, like, my master wants to marry you. And she's like, cool, I'll go with you. You know what I mean? Like, and so I would assume, yeah, late 30s.
Such
yeah.
an easier time.
Right.
You know?
Seriously.
I would have to imagine.
I mean, also they were cousins. So they like, the families knew each other.
Right.
It was fine.
Right.
They trusted them already.
Seem like good folks. Come from good stock.
This is terrible. Don't anybody try to use that to justify marrying a cousin, please. Somebody tried to do that.
That's going
to
be the newest rumor. Well, I heard Lawson say.
Yeah. Big difference between description and prescription. Mm, and also there is local law.
Also big difference in thousands of years since then.
True.
Yep.
Amounts of people on the earth.
Right. Transportation.
Right.
Options.
We're so dumb. By the way, just in case anybody wanted to know, Don made reference to Moses' other son. It's Eliezer.
Eliezer.
Yeah.
I didn't know his name.
I just felt like it was probably worth mentioning.
There's some introduced. People who believe that that's who gets circumcised here.
Well, I understand the reasoning now.
It seems like speculation.
I understand the reasoning now.
Like to think he was younger?
Yeah, or that it was the younger. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm saying that one of the reasons.
Then don't sympathize with it because it's wrong.
No, I don't think that it's. I don't think it's necessarily.
This guy's like.
I don't think
I'm toying around with it.
I mean, even if it is Eliezer, it doesn't change the overall thrust.
It changes Don's view though, because Don's big firstborn guy.
I just think there's so much firstborn narrative that's leaning in to encompass the story.
I get that. I still want to know why he didn't circumcise both of them.
So, I mean, one of the arguments is that Eliezer was born right before they left.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Like a 30-year age gap.
Yep. Literally, that's where I'm at, dude. I'm like, he's either baby guy or they already did it and he was a younger man able to withstand it. There is a little bit of being as old as what we're saying Gershom possibly was,
mm-hmm.
that there has to be a little bit of consent there, a little bit of ownership, a little bit of volition.
Yes,
and so it's like, hey man, like we're going back, you're going with us, let's go. But then he's suffering the consequences of Moses's lack of obedience in the God that would call him. He knew the whole time he was going back.
Who?
Moses.
Knew the whole time what?
The whole time he went into the wilderness, he knew God would call him back to go into Egypt and set the people free. He said he chose to bear the reproach of Christ.
Yeah, but I still think you're doing some development there.
He says, I knew that this would be, where does he say in Exodus 2?
That's in you're thinking about
surely
Acts.
Surely. Where?
You're thinking about Acts, where it says, not knowing that he was aiming to deliver them.
Gosh,
Stephen's speech.
Dude, where is that?
Stephen's speech. It's in Acts 7.
Is it in Acts 7?
Yeah. What I've been saying.
Is that where it is? In Acts 7?
Well, read it there. Read it, Hot Rod.
I just quoted it to you.
Open your Bible.
I have it open.
Get it out of your book bag.
If you have your Bible.
It's in Acts 7. And it's where he is addressing that very event.
Mm.
And inside of it, he says, not knowing or expecting them essentially to understand that it was by his hand that he was going to deliver them, which is in the 30s. Let me find this.
Oh, I have to see it. 24. And seeing one of them being wrong, he defended the oppressed man and avenged him by striking down the Egyptian. He supposed that his brothers would understand that God was giving them salvation by his hand, but they did not understand.
I don't think he does. I don't think that translates to him knowing that he was going back to Egypt the whole time he was there.
I don't like it when you all fight.
I'm just fighting. Yeah. I mean, he's going back regardless.
Yeah.
Oh, he'll be back.
It is theoretically possible that he had Eleazar after his burning bush moment.
Bro, hold on. You don't think, well, I mean, as an Israelite, he would have known the promise made to Joseph.
Yeah, he would have known all that. Yeah.
Like, he was circumcised himself. You know what I'm saying? Like,
assuming.
He would have known the promise to Abraham.
Wait, what?
400 years?
No. What are you? Hold on, back up. What did you say that Moses circumcised himself?
He would have been circumcised himself.
Oh, sorry. I was like, wait.
Some don't even agree with that. Hmm? Like, some people don't even agree with that. Some people think that that's what's happening here, is that he's being circumcised.
That's so weird, dude. It's so
a lot
evident.
Of people think it.
I know. I get that, but I'm like, I don't understand how you get there.
One of my seminary professors believes that.
I mean, the reality is I think Moses was circumcised before he ever touched that basket.
I agree.
Yeah, no, yeah. Yeah, for sure. His parents were believing.
But the argument is they were trying to keep him quiet so that he wouldn't get caught.
Yeah.
And so they
didn't. Do you hear all the speculation? It's just weird that we speculate this much.
On this particular text?
Because there's so much lack of clarity.
It's not in this particular text. In this text, there's just so much points of disagreement.
But it says, if you were, I don't know, man, and he sought to put him to death.
Who is him?
I would definitely say Gershom.
Okay. But where do you get that? Because there's no Gershom before that.
Because he's the firstborn.
I guess.
I think there's thematic narrative there that's permeating this text.
The reality is you're basing it off of the previous text where God makes reference that Israel's his firstborn son, and you're going to let Israel go, or I'm going to kill your firstborn son. You're anchoring.
And you're going to suffer the same consequences. Well,
the way God shows
no partiality. Like, this is how it works.
Yeah, the way that you understand this text is going to be based upon where you're anchoring your lens, and that's just part of it. Like, and that's the difficulty of this text. This morning I read through like 5 or 6 different commentaries on it because I just had 1 or 2 questions I wanted to build out. And in one of them, it was like, I mean, every single individual I normally read has a different interpretation of this text.
Yeah.
And there was the guy who wrote the New American Commentary who's been really helpful in this. I can't remember his name. I think it's Spencer. I mean, he totally disagreed. He's the only, I mean, he was alone. Every other person I read was totally alone, but he totally disagreed with pretty much every statement that we made, that Henry made, that Gill made. I mean, he was just totally off in a different category.
What was his different category?
So his argument was that, I'm trying to remember it. I just remember reading it and thinking, okay, you're over here. So he argued that,
if you don't know it.
Well, I think it was one of the sons.
Don't
was,
try to make it up.
So Moses had been hit by pestilence. Which I actually, that I kind of do agree with. I think that the way in which, I know I can't, but I think the way in which God is killing.
They're bringing thematic narratives to the table. And I'm like,
I agree.
I'm with you though. I get that. But I'm like, those are far outside the close scope of what's happening here. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where it's like, I get that you can pull thematic narratives, but I think what lends itself to saying it's Gershom is just it comes on the heels of this threat. And I think it's there. It's the author puts it there for a reason. And I know you like, thinking that way, Blake.
I do, but I just,
so
just, I just think that he would have said Moses, his firstborn son, and not him. You know what I mean?
Like for the sake of clarity, like I think if that's the theme running through, that's actually my biggest issue with it is if I'm building out the theme, he's literally just written the word firstborn. It makes logical sense as he's writing it to try to connect it to the next. It would be that.
Because he says firstborn that many times already.
Mm-hmm. But here's the other thing. We are in agreement on who's being circumcised.
right?
It's one of the children, absolutely.
We are, but not everybody.
Not everybody.
I'm saying these three people on this podcast are saying because,
Gershom. That's what it was. That's what it was. So his view was that Moses was being circumcised.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of like.
Yeah, that's the most far-fetched one to me.
Well, you have to deal with Zipporah calling him her son.
Exactly.
Or the text saying that he's Zipporah's son.
Exactly.
So Blake, you opened up the sermon with
here are all the things it might not be.
I thought it was helpful. You didn't say all those. You said
the most popular views.
Yeah. Mm. Here's what they were. You gave them the options.
What you don't know, it was actually the Nephilim. You're welcome for that.
So I thought, I was like, I wondered where we were, these three people were in consensus. And we are in consensus on that it's Gershom.
We think it's Gershom, yes.
And are we all in agreement that we think Gershom is not a
I don't know if
fifth
I'm a,
grader?
I don't know if I'm 100% that it's Gershom. I don't know if I'm 100% that it's Gershom.
I'm willing to comfortably say it's Moses' son.
Yeah, I'm 100% able to say that. I don't know if I'm willing to say it's Gershom.
So, because I can see Gershom being born before the burning bush and being an adult by the time the burning bush happens and being like, all right, are we really going to circumcise him? I mean, he's made it this long. Mm. And Eliezer being born after or being a child and being like, yeah, we can do it.
You know what I'm saying? I can see that.
Yeah, I can't get away from that. That's one.
You're holding on to the firstborn language, and until I know this about you. You don't have the reality is like I can't argue you out of it, and neither can anybody else. Like there's not a but it's like until you let go of that, you're not going to let go of the fact that it's Gershom,
right? So it's Gershom.
To be fair, I think that it makes it way more beautiful if it's Gershom. I just don't want because
he's volunteering
because he's the firstborn.
Yeah, but I mean, so many people are concrete in their opinion.
Oh yeah, you don't get to be concrete.
And that's
here.
The problem.
No, there's plenty of people. Like we're bringing all of this.
Oh no, I'm saying you don't get to be. What I'm saying is
it's irresponsible.
You said Gil was way outside.
No. I think Gil's
Gil. Who was the other guy that you just?
I think it's Spencer. He wrote the New American commentary on it. Yeah.
I mean, Spencer's decided on it.
Oh yeah, I mean he made some pretty dogmatic statements.
I think all of the people that have an opinion are decidedly on that opinion. And I'm like, I think you should be
I agree that you should have the opinion, but it should be this way.
You got to hold it with an open hand.
Like this.
Yeah, I agree with that. So if we're in agreement that it's one of the kids.
one of the sons,
okay. I'm totally 110% it's Gershom.
And I lean that way.
Okay. Here's what I'm open. Here's what I'm open for.
All right.
People don't like when I use this word, but I like this word. I'm agnostic.
Mm.
Who are the people that don't like
There's
that?
Just people are like, I don't like that.
People.
Agnostic. I'm agnostic around whether it's the threat of death between Moses and Gershom.
Say hey, everybody.
Nope.
Sorry.
Come on, podcast. Say hey, everybody.
I'm upset because
it gets harder. When things like this happen.
No, nor should you.
Yeah, I could. Get out. hey! And stay out! Hey. that was Lawson's daughter. All right. I think whether Moses is threatened with death or whether Gershom is threatened with death.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm open on that because I think the threat of retribution or consequence is familial.
Sure.
Like it affects the whole family. Like I think
this is why you kept saying the recompense comes upon the whole family.
Yeah.
Okay. I get your argument.
Yeah, like I mean Moses would suffer loss.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying Exodus 34:7. He's visiting the iniquities of the fathers onto the, you know,
the children.
I think
that's where I'm not. I'm not pulling from that.
I know, but I'm saying that it seems an example of that. If Gershom's going to be killed,
yes, I think if even in our own lives,
yes,
if I was to be taken from my family would suffer. If my family was taken from me.
You would suffer.
I would suffer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I think there's consequences. Mm-hmm. I'm open to saying, yeah, I mean, either way, there's consequences for disobedience.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like this was...
Spencer did also argue that it was the son who was being sought to be killed.
Which one? Was he decidedly Gershom?
I can't remember. I can't remember.
Do you think it's going to be weird when we all get together and when all the saints are gathered together?
Sure.
There's going to be, do you think it's going to be weird? I was like this. Do you think it's going to be weird that's like there's these big Bible characters that are somewhat obscure, but they will have, I think that this is a story of notoriety.
Someone this morning asked me at breakfast what generation Gershom would have been in, because would he not have been one of the fathers? Like, would he have not made it to the promised land?
He would have been mature. Yeah, he would have been. Yeah, he would. Like he would have been past 40.
He was asking, like, you know, like more or less, like, did he believe? Was he found faithful?
Ooh.
It's actually super interesting. I hadn't thought about that. But he doesn't. He doesn't come through the Exodus proper. He comes later.
Yeah, because they leave at this point. I'm pretty sure they all turn back. Go home. It's not super clear, but they seem to turn back. And in 18, they come back to the family.
So that in 18,
yeah. So he doesn't. 18, like he doesn't.
He shows back up.
Yeah, he doesn't go through the city.
The family comes back in 2018.
Yeah, Zipporah,
back, baby.
Zipporah, Gershom, and
Eliezer. Right before COVID.
I'm so sorry.
Is it Eliezer?
Chapter 18.
Eliezer? Maybe Eliezer. I don't know. How to
Eliezer.
Say it. Anyway, I mean, there's another. There is another.
We speak Eliezer. English. It doesn't matter.
But yeah, none of Moses' family makes its way through the sea.
Yeah, it says. Now Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, had taken Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her home.
Yeah.
Along with her two sons. The name of the one was Gershom. Wow.
Yeah, he sends him right after this, he sends him home. And then from this point forward, he just moves forward with Aaron.
I don't think it says that he sends him home. The assumption is that it happens.
Well, it says it here. So
yeah, it doesn't say when he did it.
It doesn't in 18?
It doesn't say when he sent him home. It just says after like he's
come,
sent
they come
home.
Back with Jethro. Yeah.
They come back to Moses.
But it doesn't say when he left, when they left Moses. The assumption is after this episode, it's like, okay, that's too much.
It is the general assumption.
That's too much. We're going to go home.
Oh, then I'm, well.
Because he won't participate in the Passover at all. They're out, I think that's pretty confident because.
They would have participated in the memorial.
Yeah, they would have participated on the other side. They would have eaten of it just like the rest of the Israelites would have. Yeah. But they would not have laid eyes on it.
He could not have. The memorial says you have to be circumcised.
That's right. Ooh.
That's chapter 12. At the end of chapter 12,
he
says...
But he's already circumcised.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's what I'm saying.
Remember, they circumcised him.
Yeah, we remember. But now he can be a participant. Everyone who eats of the Passover must actually be a circumcised.
Even a guest.
Yeah, even a guest has to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's wild.
Hey, welcome to our dinner.
Right. If you would like to eat, I need you to step outside.
But, yeah, so... So what's the, yeah, okay, go ahead.
No, I mean, this You're is flipping. Our podcast.
Well, I was just thinking, like, if I were to play hard and fast, like, I've got to pick a firm position here. The only thing that I can conclude is, like, if I were to bullet points. Number one, Moses, I think God is seeking to kill Moses by pestilence.
Okay.
No, hold on. Just a minute. So I think God's.
I think it's angel of death, bro.
So you've got the statement there in, hold on, forgive
me. The Lord
me.
Sought to put him to death.
Yeah, but the way that I've always viewed this in my mind is
Golly.
What?
We're so opinionated.
That's the authority is how you view it in your mind.
No, I'm saying I'm correcting the view that I had in my mind. The view in my mind is, like, this has always been my picture, that Moses and Zipporah and the boys... Adult men,
right?
Likely.
But I think a lot of people say children.
Children,
scratch that.
I mean, technically, it is their children.
It is,
but you're grown children, at least grown child. They're making their way, and as they're making their way, a whirlwind shows up behind them to execute Moses. That's actually the way that my brain has played that out historically. Okay. Every time I've read it, but what's interesting about it is what you have. Is Moses not being the one who circumcises the child. And so I think that what you have is God seeking to put Moses to death by pestilence. One of the reasons that I think that is because in the next text, Moses says this, Then they said, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go a 3 days journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with a sword. And so I think
it could be either one.
I know it can be either one. I'm just saying, like, the reality that Zipporah is the one who does it makes me think that he has already been struck with a form of pestilence, and Zipporah picks it up and essentially completes the task.
Fair.
That's my, like, but I mean, again, this is just, and I think this is a good place. Like, I think one of the best ways for us to think about this is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm drawing from the final plague.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the Lord will pass through. The Lord will pass over the door and will not allow the destroyer to enter your house to strike you. So I think the destroyer will strike here, and it's the Lord. That's where I'm at.
Well, I mean, I think it's the Lord in the pestilence as well.
Yeah, but I'm saying I am so tightly holding on to this firstborn concept, that blood must be shed and he must be redeemed.
Yeah, I think
otherwise the Lord will strike him down.
Yeah.
Methodology, right? As you're saying, I agree with you.
Yeah, I think,
but he's going to execute in pestilence. I'm saying he's just going to execute by word.
Yeah, and I'm either or. I to be real honest with you, either or there. Like, there's it. This is what's the statement? Half dozen one way, six the other.
Six one way, half dozen the other.
I don't. Yeah, but in that way, it's like, okay, he's going to kill one of them, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, I think what you're looking at is that God is punishing essentially Moses's disobedience to circumcise his sons, that he's not, like, even though, like, he's about to be a participant in this deliverance, he himself has been disobedient. I think one of the best points, we can come back to this in a minute. I think one of the best points was heeding the voice of your wife. I see a mirror here in Genesis 3.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyway, so that's if those are my points. Like, if I'm thinking about it, like, of the places of disagreement, it's Moses who's being sought to be killed. It's a son. I can take either one. I'm fine with that. And the bridegroom of blood thing, though, is
toss up.
Yeah, I was thinking through your point in regard to, like, participation in the covenant and covenant in the blood.
You know what I'm really convinced, though, what bridegroom of blood is?
Sure.
I read someone who talked about how the Midianites had to have had their own traditions around circumcision, because in the ancient world, most people did circumcise.
And they were descendants of Abraham still.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's several who believed that that was something that was pronounced over Midianites when they were circumcised. And I kind of think that that's what it was. Like, because it's so strange.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. If there was a citation in the New Testament of bridegroom of blood, it would be like the freest thing ever. Like, in my mind, the clear connection there is, like, the participation of a fellowship is through blood. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the way that I was thinking through it is the way in which you make your way into the new covenant. But I was thinking about it from the perspective of circumcision of the flesh, circumcision of the heart, that the way you enter in and the way that you have participation there is through circumcision of the heart. And then there's safety there. But yeah,
you know, Brad, what I was thinking about,
say,
I mean, since we're all just throwing this out here,
we're doing spaghetti.
Yeah. I was thinking about the humiliation of Goshen.
Gershom.
Sorry. And, you know, we're always looking for that. What is that? What's that correlation? What's that connection? You know, because I do think there's something there. You know, something there. Yeah. That's what you're dealing with, is moving these pieces around. So my mind is moving the pieces around after hearing you preach. And I was like, Gershom, humiliation.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot
by
there.
By his wounds, we were healed. By his humiliation, we were healed. Mm-hmm. You know, the hand of the Lord is stayed because of. You know what I'm saying? That's where I was with it. I'm like, I don't know.
No, I think it makes sense. I mean, you think about him as a 30-year-old man.
Salvation in the sun. I just thought that was a little... I didn't feel comfortable enough to take it that far.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know what I mean? Because, I mean, there were several people who said that.
Oh, really?
There's salvation provided through the sun. It just felt... I don't know.
So this is where I am.
It felt like too much. Like,
yeah, even when I'm saying that, I'm like, I think that's a small group talk it out.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Like, by his wounds, like, this humiliation. You know what I'm saying?
This is
like
a super good point to talk about, because I think if you overplay,
it cheapens the real ones.
It cheapens the real ones.
Yep.
Like the ones that are so clear, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're looking at these things, and, you know, if you go in and you allegorize that, which, I mean, let's be serious, you could allegorize them endlessly, this text.
Oh, yeah.
And probably at the very same time get super hearty yes and amens from people in the midst of the allegory. Yeah. And everything that would have been said in the midst of the allegory would have been true conclusions, because Blake's not going to say something that's untrue, but it's just not going to be a real connecting point.
Yeah.
There was a big connecting point. I need to go back and listen. I should have listened to it again. I felt like everybody leaned in early on at one point. There was something you said, man. I'm going to have to go back and pull that. Like, I felt like the whole room is like, do you remember this?
No.
I'll find it, dude. We're just making everybody want to go listen.
There you go. The, what was I going to say? Uh-huh. Oh, no, but the going back to, like, the way that we, I think when we like announced Exodus, there were a couple things we talked about, but one of them was how do we preach an Old Testament book with the New Testament in mind? Mm. And I think one of the best ways we do that is, yeah, we said this, which is not forcing them. Mm-hmm. And I think this would be a really easy one to force and say, here, like, literally the word blood use, therefore, right? I can run through and here are all the ways this takes place. And I think having some holy restraint in the way that we apply those things helps the crescendo moments, because they don't feel like, oh, well, I wonder how Lawson or Blake's going to manipulate this text into the New Testament.
And I think that the way I think about it is in levels, right? And I think about this in application too. So, for example, in Romans, food sacrificed to idols, we don't deal with that, right?
Yeah.
And so we have to take it up a level and say, like, what's the higher view of this where I can apply this that, like, deals with people who don't see food sacrificed to idols in their markets all the time? And so we take a higher, and I think that's how I think about the Old Testament too, is like, all of these things are true, and you see blood is, you know, in reading, you read blood, that should bring up ideas.
Yeah.
But you can't say, you can't sit here and say, well, we have a true and better bridegroom of blood.
Right.
And it's like, cause I don't, like,
you don't know what that term means. You could be saying something insane.
Or heretical.
Heretical. Yeah, absolutely.
Blasphemous. Yeah. And so, like, you have to be, if you don't know what it means legitimately, and there's no way to know unless we could get a time machine, there's no way to find out.
That would be an interesting conversation.
What it means.
Zipporah in heaven, we have this conversation.
That's what I was trying to get at. Like, when we all get to heaven, it's like, I think there's going to be
She's going
to
be bored of talking about it.
Like, what had happened?
Like, guys, it's just a phrase we use.
Right. Didn't you circumcise your son too?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like long lines. Like, I think about, like, conventions, you know, it's like, I want to meet so and so. It's like,
is that the lady's restroom line? No, it's just the line trying to talk to Zipporah.
Zipporah's line. It's like, what is happening?
So do you think, this was another conversation you brought up, which was the way in which, like, the way in which Zipporah says this. So hold on. We know your view. Do you think she says it like happily or frustrated, angry?
Oh, no. I see it as body movement, like,
she throws
disgusted.
It.
She's big
I
mad.
I go back to there has been an economy of submission and act and obedience, and there's humiliation. And there's humiliation for all involved.
Yeah, so can you clarify, Blake, why don't you take this opportunity to clarify the euphemism of feet?
Okay, so there is some prominent belief that the word feet is a euphemism for the male genitalia that the Hebrews would use instead of saying the words.
Yep. Which is actually an important point as you're working through it.
Carry out the...
So in the sense, she, when she tosses or places the detached foreskin at his feet, I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's falling in his lap.
Essentially, she's throwing it in his lap. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And people take that too far.
Yeah.
In the sense that he, in a sense, is covered by the blood of his son. Mm. And I'm like, I don't know if I can go there.
Yeah.
Like, it's a cool picture. Not appropriate, really, for a Sunday morning sermon, I don't think. But
again, I think also a good point.
Small
to say.
Group fodder.
Yeah, small group, good conversation. Yeah, depending on the...
Like, I felt comfortable talking to some men about it yesterday, but I even at small group, I was like...
on a podcast talking about it.
So. Yeah, but
yeah, but I mean, like...
But I mean, I think this is point... There are euphemisms that are used, and they're used the same way that we use them. If we're describing this to someone in our modern-day vernacular,
right.
We probably wouldn't use the terminology...
We're not using medical terms.
No, we're not. And so we're going to say, in the lap, right?
We'll soften the terms.
Exactly. And so, but I think that plays a part because, you know, Don, you brought up humiliation there. It's like, I agree. Like, I think she is angry.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, also why I think that Aaron was told to go into the wilderness.
Why?
I don't think that they can immediately get there. I think there's some healing time for whoever it is.
So that's the thing. That's why
they got to meet each other halfway.
Wherever they are, it's like, hey, I need you to go
out there.
So this very purpose is the reason that people think this is where they sent them back.
They can't make the journey anymore.
Oh.
Yeah, because they can't make the journey anymore.
I love a great forensic reading of the text.
Yeah, so the whole concept is they've circumcised Gershom, and now it's like, okay,
they're there.
You can't come. You're staying for a little bit, right? And then Moses and Aaron make their way back into Egypt, and then Gershom
they
and
go home.
They go home.
Oh, I'm here for that.
Yeah, I think it makes the most sense. Yeah,
yeah,
and that's because the rest of the text
it clarifies. It gives it to you. Yeah, it gives it to you. And so, like, the question is, like, when do they go home? It's like, what? Oh, yeah, between the seventh and eighth plague. Why? I don't know. Like, this makes logical sense. It's like, okay,
he had surgery.
Yeah, he had surgery, and it was like, I'm going to stay
as a grown
now.
Man.
Yeah, I'm not participating in this anymore.
A few weeks recovery time.
Yeah, and you don't hear Zipporah's name.
At least, dude.
Yeah.
At least.
You don't hear Zipporah's name for an extended period of time. And I mean,
I think that's further reason to assume that
she's big mad.
She's not seen highly by the author.
Whoa.
Wait, what do you mean?
You think Moses is
I don't think he's bitter. I'm just saying, like, we don't hear about her anymore.
I mean, she reintroduces in 18.
Yeah, but when you think about, like, think about how Abraham, how Sarah is spoken of when she dies. And even in her life.
Yeah, I don't know.
Abraham's so worried.
I'm going to be careful with that one only because... Moses has done a really good job of impugning himself and will continue to do so.
I hear you. Yeah, I'm just saying... We don't hear anything
I think
else.
He's living as a single man at this point, not in reality, but because he, like Paul describes, we should all in the latter days live as though we were, you know.
But we're not looking at a massive gap between him going home at 18.
Yeah. I'm just saying he is.
But I mean, what do you hear about her after that?
Not much, but I mean, I think you can run through various figures, and if their wives are not necessarily important to the story they're telling them.
I'm not trying to say that he hates her at this point, but I am saying, like, she doesn't seem to take a front seat in his ministry.
No, but I don't think even if she did, it would be forefront.
That's fair.
But inside of,
I think it'd be weird for her to be there.
Yeah, it would be weird. Yeah,
like, hey, I'm going here. I'm gonna go as the one God sent, and my brother's meeting me there. We're going to have 10 plagues break out.
Yeah, but then I'm like, why'd they go to begin with?
I mean, I actually think the bringing of his family was a really interesting, like, I would not build out a whole bunch on that. Like, I don't think, somebody made an argument that God's coming to kill him because why would you bring your family on this?
Yeah.
That's a pretty frail one. But in the midst of that, like, it makes sense to me that he would want to bring his family. Mm-hmm. I think the disobedience prevented his family from being a participant in the Exodus itself. Fair. And so... That being the case, I think they make their way back post the Exodus and are participants in his life from that point forward. It is interesting. You don't ever hear of Moses having another spouse or anything like that.
Like Abraham,
right? Mm-hmm. He stays with her. But I think Zipporah's mad. I think she's angry. And I think that her anger is perhaps, you brought this point out and I was like, oh, that's such a good point. I think her anger is evidence of the fact that she did not want to submit to Moses, and more importantly, to what God had actually mandated concerning circumcision. And so that she eventually just is like, fine, we'll do it, because if we don't, you're going to die. Like, those, you know, and at that point, you can either play Moses or Gershom, depending on who you think is who God's coming to kill. And anyway, to me, that was such a good point, because I think about the ways in which we speak, like, I think we speak really harshly And I think we should speak firmly, not harshly. I think we should speak firmly to men and their leadership. I think we should speak firmly that, that wives should submit to their husbands. And at the very same time, I'm looking at this narrative and I'm like, there's just utter failure on both.
Yeah.
Moses, yeah. Moses refused to lead his family in the things of God. Like he refused to essentially look at his wife if she was saying, I'm not doing this, and him knowing that he has God's authority to say, no, we are going to obey God. And he didn't do it. Or Zipporah is just like, I'm absolutely refusing, will not do this. And I think that it was just such a, to me, it was such a good point of like, man, when you're going with the commands of God, like they need to be observed in your home, and you as the head of your home need to lead in that.
And I think even, yeah, that's on Moses. Like even though she's in refusal,
yeah,
it's still on him. Like he's got flints at his disposal. You know what I mean?
No, like, I'm with you in that, but I'm still saying like she is, I'm saying this. She is not an example to model in this narrative.
And
like
the reality is no one is.
Right. But
apart from maybe Gershom.
But in general, I'm saying that like you're not looking at one who is Proverbs 31.
Yeah, of course.
I think that's an interesting contrast because I think you have other figures, right, where they bolster the fidelity of their husband over and against
But I think that the story of the patriarchs is that they don't.
Is that they don't what?
The wives don't bolster the leadership of her husband. I mean.
Yeah, no, I get that.
You got Rebecca's trying to trick Isaac at the end.
True.
You got, I mean.
Sarah laughing.
Well, Sarah goes along with this whole like. Yeah,
true too. Sarah and Hagar.
I'm his sister. No. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, that, like all yeah. of that. You know? Yeah, yeah. That's fair.
So, I mean, I think. The story of the patriarchs is that you got a bunch of unfaithful people that the Lord is faithful to.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with Moses.
That's fair.
So there's been a lot of question on like, what is circumcision? Like, what is it? What is it actually doing? Like, and I think you hit on it, which it is. It's entry into a covenant. Right?
It's a sign of the covenant that God has with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
I think this is where it gets confusing for a lot of people. I mean, I'll happily...
The duality of the Abrahamic covenant? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think he's making reference to the actual specificity of what is circumcision and why.
Yeah, so okay. So why, right? Why is it a thing? Why is it commanded? And what does it...
And why is it what it is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think these are good questions. I have a theory. I'll give you the theory.
Awesome.
So can I lay this? Because this has been my thought. Like there's like with a covenant, especially with the new covenant,
mm-hmm.
it's only inaugurated at the shedding of blood.
Repeat that, please. Sorry.
So a covenant, once it's been signed or ratified, must be established by the death of the one who made it. And that's through bloodshed. In the sense of the new covenant.
Okay.
This is a covenant in one sense, in the old.
Mm-hmm.
And in one sense, you have shedding of blood. And it just makes me think, are they shedding blood as means of entry into this covenant? So there has to be shedding of blood. Like it's a promise established by God, and the entry, you were just saying this earlier.
Yeah, but I'm
working through like the shedding of blood. Like
so their entry into the covenant is actually not the circumcision. It's the birth. Circumcision is a sign of the covenant. And if you deny the sign, then you cut yourself off from participation in it. So your actual lineage is what brings you in. You're in covenant based upon.
But you're saying that the participant of the covenant,
right,
is not only birth,
right,
but it is also circumcision. That's what you're saying.
I'm saying
because you're cut
continued,
off.
Continued participation in the covenant requires
the
obedience to the positive sign.
Right.
Yes. Yes. Okay. But the sign is not the covenant.
Sure, I understand that.
Okay.
The covenant is a written, sworn promise.
Right.
A declaration.
So in the Abrahamic, we're looking at specifically the Abrahamic covenant, you're looking at promise of seed, of offspring, mm-hmm. of blessing, of nations and kings.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm just trying to think through the purposeful reason of why you would have the shedding of the foreskin and blood. Yeah. And it makes me think, contrasting that with the new covenant, that it establishes, it inaugurates that, it yeah. brings you into it. You're saying, yes, you're already born into it, but to maintain yourself in it, you have to take the sign and the seal. And I'm saying that's answering, that's giving me an affirmative on how I'm thinking.
Yeah, so I hear that, but I think the real question is, well, at that point, why are we not looking at...
Like, why not slit your wrist or something?
Yeah, so it's like, I'm saying, why specifically your are palm. We looking at... So you're making reference to
I'm
blood.
I'm saying, why God commanded it.
Yeah, you're making reference to blood. Itself, right? So yes, you're identifying yes. blood, which I think is an interesting point, but blood is not required of every single participant, because blood isn't required of the women.
Sure.
Right? Yeah, and so that's what I think is the interesting point. What you're actually looking at is a sign that's specifically given for the male. And I think the reason that you're looking at the, I think the sign is specifically given the way that it is because I think you're looking at the promised offspring. And I think mm-hmm. you're essentially looking at the identification of the man being the one through whom the seed will come. And again, we affirm that it's the seed of woman, but we're looking at the tracing of that seed. And I think that the circumcision being a sign of this is where the promised offspring is going to come from. Which is, I mean, like, I know that's a really graphic thing to consider, but I'm convinced that that's the primary reason.
It feels wrong to say, like, the cleanness of the line.
No, I think that's fair.
But that's yeah. my thought, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, they're establishing, maintaining their participation in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Through the mark in the flesh.
Right.
Of course.
Right.
And that's where in Galatians, they were continuing to argue for that, to say, make the mark in your flesh again, because this keeps you mm-hmm. participating in this covenant.
And then Paul, and is it Philippians where he calls them the cut-off ones?
No, it's Galatians where he calls them the cut-off concision. Ones. The concision, yeah, through. But what's interesting about this is...
Oh, he hammers them, bro.
The conclusion of this, though, is... This is a fun kind of push forward, but... You know, you're making reference like, okay, well, the way in which you continue to participate in this covenant is through the mark of circumcision, right? Like, this is how we know that you're actually a participant. If you do not have the sign, then you're going to be cut off. You're not going to be allowed to participate in the promises of God. Again, identifying the fact that participation in the covenant of Abraham was based upon your own covenant keeping. Inside of the new covenant, Paul, in the conclusion of Galatians, provides a rebuttal. And his rebuttal is, from now on, let no one cause me trouble, for I bear on my body the marks of Jesus. And so he's saying, like, I'm bearing the marks of fellowship with Christ. And, you know, people can give all types of conjecture here, like, okay, he's talking about the suffering that he's endured and all of that. But I think what you're actually looking at there is he's not talking about, look at what it says in 12 and 13. It is those who want to make a good showing in the flesh who would force you to be circumcised, and only in order that they are not that they may not be persecuted for the cross of Christ. For even those who are circumcised do not themselves keep the law, but they desire to have you circumcised that they may boast in your flesh. Far be it from me to boast except in the cross of the Lord Jesus Christ, by which the world has been crucified to me and I to the world. For neither circumcision counts for anything nor uncircumcision, but
God,
new
bro, he's
creation.
Calling it idolatry.
Yeah, he is. He is.
Really is calling
he
is. It,
he calls it idolatry.
When you use the word world. I was thinking about this the other day. I was meditating on this. It's idolatry of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
It's fear of man.
Huh?
Fear of man.
Yeah, for sure.
But that language of, he's saying, it's not about this. It is fear of the world, because what he's aiming is to, like, the way that the Jews are writing about this, I want to get out of being persecuted for Christ, so I'll just bear in my body the marks of circumcision.
Hey, brothers, we're all circumcised.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. So we're good.
Yeah.
And so
he says, I preach circumcision, and so why then am I still being persecuted? He says that.
He does say that. Yeah, yeah.
And which is proof for his argument, right?
Yeah. And so, but the major thing is...
But he's using that to say circumcision of the heart.
Right,
yes.
Right.
Yeah, like, y'all need to come along with me.
Right,
yeah.
But like, so 15, for neither circumcision counts for anything nor uncircumcision, but a new creation. And so the marks of Christ that he's speaking of, I think he's actually wrapping it up into one, and he's wrapping up both the mark that I bear that makes me have fellowship with Christ is my new creation, that is regeneration, circumcision of the heart, and the marks for proclaiming such a scandalous gospel that it's something this simple. But, you know, the beauty of the new covenant circumcision of the heart is it's extended to every single participant upon their birth, mm-hmm. right? It is their birth. And so it's extended not just to the males, but to the females as well. They actually have participation.
Because he says, I mean, we have to remind ourselves that he says, did Abraham take the mark of circumcision in his flesh
Before or
after he believed, and it says after.
After. Because we're not, yeah, that's a whole nother.
That's a whole nother what?
Well, I was, yeah, so I'm trying not to.
About next week's catechism question.
Bro, so.
Are the infants of such as are professing believers to be baptized? That's the question.
Look, I'm going to look for Rowan because we do signs. We
What's
do, like,
Paul
emotions.
Saying? By no means.
By no means. That's what we're going to do. That, but yeah, so I just think the way that we're looking at this narrative.
It goes hard. Seriously. Like,
oh, yeah. It's
question 99's answer.
Yeah.
What does it say?
We'll read it.
The infants of such as are professing believers are not to be baptized because there is neither command or example in the Holy Scriptures or certain consequence from them to baptize such.
You know, my favorite basketball move is when somebody is running down the court, they throw it off the backboard,
yeah.
They catch it and dunk it.
Yeah. Ali.
You know what?
Thank you, Keach, for doing that for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
We dunk basketballs, not children.
Not babies.
Yeah, not babies. Not infants.
We baptize those who do actually profess faith. So one conclusion that I want to make about this text is there are difficult passages in the Bible.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was trying to get to with my second point in my sermon.
You requested this passage though, Blake.
Okay, can we talk about the meaning? I want my words back in the words of Lawson.
You requested this.
Requested is a strong word. Mm-hmm. I think that I mentioned months ago that I'd be willing to preach the passage.
That's not what you said. I deny that. You literally told me on live air the other day that I have excellent recall. I'm telling you that's not what you said.
I don't know.
Listen, I don't define the other day. I wasn't on the last
one. It was a while back, but it's recorded somewhere, and because you were like, your recall's ridiculous.
But do you come down and you feel good about it? Was that a good decision that you made?
I'm glad I studied it.
Yeah.
I think that there's always opportunity to be more clear.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, I feel that more heavily in a sermon that's so strange like this.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I got the opportunity to study it. I would not have studied it that much had I not preached it.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't think you were unclear at all.
No, I'm saying, like, even in my own mind.
No, I get that. Yeah. I'm telling you, take the compliment. I'm telling you, I don't think you were unclear.
Y'all look into your eyes.
No, I'm not doing that. So the other portion.
He wasn't looking, but I looked.
The other portion of this is, I think that there are texts that people are like, I don't know what to do with this. We're just going to make a quick comment and move on. Now that isn't to say there are some texts that are meant to be connective and they're not meant to be major points. That makes perfect sense. I think this one is so loud in the way it identifies itself. It's like, no, this one does need to be dealt with. Here's what I'll say. And this is a great compliment, is that I think everybody in the congregation now has an understanding of this text, both in its, okay, here's how I can think about this. And I'll say that I think the text was engaged by the rest of the congregation, which in this particular sense,
that's
a good thing. I think that's what has to happen. I don't, but I also think
that's what you by and large won't know about. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, it's like when I walk away and you hear other people are processing, like, okay, well, there's a lot of thoughts that are about this passage. Mm-hmm. We heard about the options of what are valid thoughts, right? What are possibilities? And then what you preach through is what your perspective was. I think it prompts everybody to think through and meditate on that scripture and be like, and I think that's just good. That's good for the congregation. That's good for us as individuals. Mm-hmm. And like when I'm reaching out, you know, to people like immediately after, and I know other people were doing that, like, hey, I thought about this or I thought about that. That's good for the soul.
I don't know what you could do better than that in this
yeah,
text.
For sure.
Like, I think the conclusion of this text is engage the Bible.
That or you could be irresponsible.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And try to do a mic drop moment. And it's like,
here's my conclusion. Right. You can't find it anywhere and it makes no sense at all, but here it is. And it's a good point.
And you're just like, Jesus is our better, like whatever. And it's like, okay, but no,
please don't do that.
Yeah.
All right. So in conclusion, I don't know who has a Bible verse.
Okay.
Turn to your map.
So frustrating.
No, I'm not frustrated. I'm not frustrated.
One verse, Lawson.
I just closed
it. Singular verse.
I got it.
As long as you never do that again, you can read it.
Hold on. Okay. Romans 4:13. For the promise to Abraham, his offspring, that he would be heir of the world, did not come through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. For it is the adherents of the law who are to be the heirs. Faith is null and the promise is void. For the law brings wrath, but where there is no law, there is no transgression. This is why it depends on faith, in order that the promise may rest on grace and be guaranteed to all his offspring, not only to the adherents of the law, but also to the one who shares the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all.
So I'd like to thank my fellow elders, Lawson Harlow and Blake McCullough, for the time spent today. Fellas, we're all a piece of this puzzle. My brothers and my friends, Godspeed.
What if Charles decides not to listen to this one day?
He's like,
hey, I just posted it. I'm assuming nothing crazy was said. He was like, what would lead you to assume that?
I know, right?